On this episode of the Edge podcast, ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Colleen Tyner, Senior Vice President at Beeline, a software company that helps organizations source and manage contingent labor. Colleen shares her career path in the technology industry, as well as what product managers should focus on to build a successful product and the three major areas of product management. Colleen also walks us through her value system and her thoughts on how to get more women in leadership roles. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and welcome to our latest version of the Edge podcast. Today, I am here with Colleen Tyner, Senior Vice President at Beeline. We actually met Colleen a little while ago through Brian Hoffmeyer, so he also is an SVP with Beeline. I was fortunate to sit on a panel with Brian through SIA's Executive Forum recently, and he and I were chatting a little bit about the Edge podcast, so women in recruitment and all of the efforts that myself and ClearEdge do around that. And without hesitation, he was adamant and even followed up right away with an email and a phone call that I should feature you on the Edge. So fast forward a couple of months, and here we are. I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today, Colleen.
Great. I'm glad to be here, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
So I typically would make the assumption with a company like Beeline, so coming from the staffing and recruitment industry, I'm very familiar with the company, and I would make the assumption that probably 99.9% of our listeners have heard of Beeline as well. But you never know who's actually listening and trying to get some great advice from you and the podcast in general. So to play it safe, please share with the audience a little bit of background about the company and what it is that you do.
Absolutely. I would love to. So at Beeline, we specialize in software that optimizes what's called the non-employee workforce. So some people call it the extended workforce or the external workforce. So think of it as contractors, consultants, temporary workers, that kind of workforce. So our solution does two things. It helps companies find and acquire those workers, manage them, and process billing and payment for those workers. And then also it helps them understand how they're using non-employees or this extended workforce, how they control risks and compliance with their policies and processes internally that are associated with that part of their workforce, and then evaluate how they can leverage this more flexible type of workforce labor to grow and serve their business. So that's what our company does. The types of customers we serve typically are global 2000 software firms. We do have a good number of customers that I would consider mid-sized companies as well, but that typically describes our customer base and what we do for them.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, I believe in looking back at our history of the Edge that you may be our first product marketing expert. So obviously you wear a lot of hats at Beeline and you have for the past 13 plus years. So perhaps what you could do is share a little bit about your career progression and then how it led to the launch of Credible.
Sure. It's funny, like most product management people or product strategists that I know, I sort of meandered into my role by collecting what I call transferable skills through different types of work experiences. So I've worked in software at some form in almost every position in my career. So that's been a constant. But I've also had a lot of different experiences through industries like property and casualty insurance, business process consulting. I was in e-learning for a bit. I actually worked in accounting and at a law firm in my career. And all of those experiences sort of influenced my path, if you will, to building products. The other constant across all of them, other than software, was they all gave me an opportunity to learn empathy for customers and users, their challenges and their needs. And that really, to me, informs a product manager or product strategist for how they move forward and how they actually bring products to market that solve true business problems. So I would say that's a good capture of my experience. our new offering, Credible, which we'll talk a little bit about, is especially interesting because it's actually speaking to a part of our customer base that I feel like solutions like us have traditionally not focused on. Those specific customer base would be staffing and consulting suppliers that are responsible for finding great talent that companies are seeking. We've historically focused more on the enterprise company and their needs and neglected a little bit, if you will, the staffing company or the consulting company. So I've definitely developed some empathy for the supplier community while designing the solution. But I kind of bring that through my career path as well.
I would say so, especially I love your definition on the product marketing side. I was just speaking with someone earlier who was interviewing actually for a product marketing role, but seeing more in a traditional marketing role just based on title and definition. So I like the way you delineated between the two, and I do feel like in our industry, at least where I see it, there's some confusion still between the more traditional marketing role and that of product marketing and how a marketer could, let's say, transition into a more product marketing role, what that would look like and how that's possible. I'm going to throw that out to you. Do you have any feedback for people career transition wise as they're looking to go, let's say they're at more of a recruitment firm and they want to come work at Beeline in product marketing? What would you normally look for? What experience should they gain to kind of shift over to that side of the house?
Sure. I think there's three major areas, and if you kind of take product management and break it apart into kind of three things. There's product strategy, there's product management, and there's product marketing. And really, it depends on how big the company is, how many products, or what their portfolio looks like, on whether you play all of those roles or wear all of those hats, or if you have different people in those positions. It really just depends. And each one requires a slightly different skill set. And I've met quite a few people in my time that actually have a skill set that crosses all of them. Product marketing tends to be more about understanding your users and your buyers and having empathy for their problems and needs, and then using that information to communicate with them and share with them the value of your product. Product management uses that same understanding, but they use it to inform decisions about what to build and how to work with maybe a development team or a production team on how to solve those problems specifically, less about the communication aspect of it, although that's often part of it. And then a product strategist uses that same knowledge and information to actually see and ask yourself, what is it that this customer actually needs that they're not even able to tell me, but that I can infer from all the problems that I'm hearing or this set of customers or this set of or this market segment that they may not be able to articulate, but you can infer from putting the puzzle pieces together. So those are kind of the three roles. And what I would say to somebody maybe thinking about getting into this space is what are your strengths? Do you have that strength of listening to different problems and be able to pull those pieces together? And that kind of fits a little more in the product strategy realm. Are you an activator? Do you hear those problems? And does your mind go straight to solutions that can help solve them? Then, maybe you need to dip your toe in product management. And then are you a communicator? That would be the other one for product marketing. And if you can really hone in on that empathy for the end user and the end customer, and then transform that into communications about helping them understand value and the value that you could bring to them, then that's your product marketing type of role. So I would really assess sort of where you think your strengths are.
Got it. Thank you. That's super helpful. I know someone right away when this goes live, I'm going to share that with because they're, looking at different opportunities in the market. And certainly within our industry, technology, recruitment technology is growing at such a rapid pace. There's a lot of, again, opportunity for people to grow within their career to look at maybe going into that product side. So thank you for that. So with that, I was trying to read up a little bit on you and your background, and one of the things that I really admired was that you actually published your professional value system. So you put it out there, you put it in writing, and it's something that you hold true to in everything that you do. So I thought perhaps we could spend a little bit of time on that, because each of the three values that you listed, I believe, could be of interest to people based on how you came up with them and what they actually mean to you. So I'll read through the three, and then we'll kind of backtrack to the first, second, and then third. So the first being, be pragmatic and take calculated risks. The second, continuously learn and pay it forward by investing in others. And the third, lead with professional grace and conviction. And I love the words that you chose throughout each one of those. So let's go back and we'll start with be pragmatic and take calculated risks. So perhaps you can tell us why you listed this as one of your professional values, but through a story of your own where you perhaps took a calculated risk. Even within your own career, if you were, you know, your own career champion, we talk about being that a lot for yourself. Perhaps you can share one of your own personal stories there.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that my profile was helpful for you. It is something that I was very mindful when I put together the words, right, in that value system. Over the years, I've learned a lot. And I think that shapes my ability in my current career, what I'm doing. And really, sort of anything that I take on, those are kind of the core things that that guide me, if you will, based on lots of lessons learned, hard times, hard experiences, failures, those kinds of things. So, on the being pragmatic and taking calculated risks, I think probably the best story on this one is about how I got to Beeline. Actually, I started Beeline 13 years ago. Prior to that, I was working for a company. That is in the property and casualty space. It was very clear to me after about 5 years with that company that my trajectory was not up. It was not going to pretty much go very far. I knew my value and my potential, as did those that were around me, my boss, my boss's boss, his boss. I was leading big teams and taking on some very big projects that had significant impacts to the company. Even at one point, being part of a patented solution that was brought to market in that industry, the first of its kind. But I was not getting the career growth associated with the value that they were getting from me and from my effort. And I talked with my boss about it because I'm a pretty direct person and that's what I do. And I didn't get anywhere. And I talked to his boss about it and made my expectations clear. And while it was never said directly to me that there was a glass ceiling, there definitely was an insinuation. And not just because I was a woman, but the premise was at that time in my life, I also hadn't finished my undergrad degree. And what I realized is that was being used as an excuse, because at a certain point in your career, that almost the experience outweighs, you know, your choices that you made on your degree, for instance. So by not finishing, I'd really given them a reasonable excuse in their minds to hold me back. And, you know, my philosophy is the only person that can hold you back is yourself. So it's all about your choices that you make. And this is where I took a calculated risk. I started looking for a company that had a talent first philosophy, and I found Beeline. To move to Beeline, I had to make some big compromises, and this is where I think the risk became quite calculated. Some would say that it was a step backwards. I moved into an individual contributor role rather than leading big teams at a big, you know, large corporation. And it was also a risk because it was a lower position with a lower salary. But my gut said, after I had talked with the company and really learned their value system, that if I did what I knew I was capable of doing, that I would actually move forward very quickly, and I would be taking a step back to make a leap forward. And it ended up being that way. It was a success. It was a good calculated risk. I completed my degree to make sure there was no excuse when I wanted to get to the SVP level, and I did my thing, and it paid off. So I think that probably aligns to the pragmatic and calculated risk philosophy.
Well, and you, I mean, first and foremost, you believed in yourself and you knew by making that change. And, you know, we all think of the career ladder, so to speak, as a straight ladder going up or down. And in reality, it's not. It can very well be, someone had recently mentioned, like a jungle gym. So
Absolutely.
Sometimes you take a couple steps forward, it could be sideways, could be backwards, and you could do that all over again until you get to the right place. But the key thing there is you were relying on yourself and not others to make it a success for you. So I give you a lot of credit for that and sharing that story. I'm mentoring someone right now who is more than likely going to have to take a step in her mind back to move forward. And it's really upsetting to her. So I think the more people can share their stories about what they're doing and that, you know, it's hard not to think of it that way. But when you really think of it as it's to get you to that next level, sometimes you have to do these different things. And because you're relying on yourself to get there, it can work and it does work. So that's great. Well, and perhaps that's why with your continuous learning and pay it forward by investing in others' value, I could imagine that you more than likely are looking at that mentoring piece and helping people as they move up in their careers and just in general. So I had read something where you referenced mentoring women who have achieved great success in senior leadership roles. So I'm curious, as you mentor people, is there something that stands out that you have found almost like a theme or consistent? And maybe not, but just curious if something stands out to you that you believe the audience may benefit from hearing. So again, a consistent theme maybe as you're mentoring people that stands out.
Absolutely. That's a really good question. It's something that I think a lot about. I manage a very diverse team today. I wouldn't say I specifically reserve comments for women. I think it applies across the spectrum of individuals. What I've found most interesting, and I will say it probably tends to be most problematic for women, is really in understanding your value and believing in that, and then also not apologizing for getting paid for your value. So I would break it down into two things. One, make sure you're driving value for the company. You own your path and your growth, as we just discussed. Your boss doesn't. Your boss's boss doesn't. Don't wait for a performance review to get feedback. Ask for it. Listen for clues on what you can be doing better and how you can be adding value to the company, not just from your boss, but, for instance, from the company strategy. You might be hearing that, you know, we need to move in a certain direction. Well, what can you do to help the company get there? And how can you do that in a way that's transparent so people can see not just that you're claiming credit, but the actions that you're taking, and you become more inspiring that way? I would force the conversations with, you know, and I do this today and recommend it to everyone that I work with. Force the conversation with your boss. Don't wait for them to schedule a one-on-one. Schedule it with them. Bring your agenda. Talk about how you can be of more value, you know, what you're seeing. Ask for their input, and really create that relationship so that they know that you're trying to succeed and not just ask for something that you haven't earned, right? You're really showing it. And then number two, and this one is a big one for me, and I learned this, you know, about that time we talked about, I guess about 18 years ago, do not apologize for expecting to get paid for your value. You lose power in negotiations when you do that. You know, one of the things that just makes me crazy, and it is women, unfortunately, that sort of come in with this mindset and this vocabulary that I see consistently, which is, you know, I want to talk to you. It's not about the money, but it is, and it's okay for it to, you know, be about the money and what you're earning. You are paid to do an amazing job. And if you're doing that job and you're doing it effectively and amazingly, then you should be paid equitably. And you shouldn't be apologetic for asking for that. So I think those are the two things, you know, if I were to share some advice, those would be the two things that I would share for sure.
I'm starting to see a theme come forward in your value system here. And one of the things I think is just being confident in making the ask, and not just asking for the sake of asking, but having that kind of business case behind the ask to support it. But knowing that if you don't ask, you won't get yes. And obviously, if you just wait for someone to do it, you're more than likely it's not going to happen in every case. And no fault to anyone other than, like you said before, yourself. You need to take control of that situation and take accountability for that. So I would agree wholeheartedly with that. You know, you, Colleen, are a senior leader in our industry. And as of late, I've been introduced to a few women in our industry who I, and not by any stretch do I know everyone, but I feel like there's a lot of these hidden gem of senior leaders within our space. And I love the idea of getting more word out about the different women, like through our podcast and through different mediums, so people know that we do exist and we are there and we have a voice and we're helping a lot of people who are kind of coming up the ranks, so to speak. And, you know, one of the things I think perception-wise is that within the recruitment space or talent acquisition in general, there happen to be a lot of women oftentimes in the kind of what I would say mid or entry level role, some in senior leadership, but not a lot at that C-suite board or even investor level position. And one would say, and you mentioned it earlier, that position of power, putting yourself in that position of power. What are your thoughts as far as how we think we can get more women like you in leadership roles? What do you think we need to do as an industry to start seeing that shift? Will it naturally just happen? Are there things we can do? Maybe it's a combination of both over time, but I'd love to get your perspective on that.
Wow, that's a big question. I think there's a lot of ways to look at it. One thing I would say is that nothing naturally just happens. When it comes to women in the boardroom and at the C-suite level, it definitely is a drive, you know, that we need to have and that companies need to have. I think the first, you know, there's a couple things. One, companies are starting to recognize the value of diversity, gender diversity, ethnic diversity in the boardroom. There are different perspectives, cultural diversity, those types of things. So while we don't have a lot of women in the boardroom today, I think that still continues to be a challenge. It's attainable, and I think we're at a moment in our, especially in the United States, in a moment in time where I think we'll start to see some shifting because of a lot of different factors, social factors, education factors. But we have to do more. So what I would say, what we can do specifically, a couple of things from a you have control over your career perspective, as we talked about before, we need to be looking for where are we in a successor seat? Am I sitting in a successor seat? Am I sitting in a seat that positions me to be the next one to be evaluated for that position? Have I done what I need to do? And if I haven't, how do I do that? And how can I position myself in that way? And that goes back to understanding your value and where you can make the biggest difference in your company. So I think that's one that you have control over. You own it. You have to put yourself in the right position. I think the other piece of it, it's a longer ride or road, if you will, and that is in the classroom. And this is something I've spoken a lot with my CTO about. She's a woman in our industry. She joined, we were part of a merger, and she joined our company a couple years prior to the merger as what I believe is one of the first women on the board at the company we merged with at the time, IQN. I was the first woman on the executive team at Beeline. Since then, we now have a 50% diversity in terms of gender on our executive team. So you can't discount breaking the ceiling and getting at least one person there, because it does start to open it up for other people, and you can't shortcut that at all. And so that's really important. But the next big area is in the classroom. And I was speaking with Sherry Hammonds, as I mentioned, our CTO, about this topic specifically, actually. And she's really passionate about technology and engineering and business being part of education and in the very beginning, right, from elementary school forward, and really looking at how we treat boys and girls in the classroom. It's not okay to, expect a girl to be sort of the quiet follower. If she is exhibiting leadership potential, that should be that should be fostered and grown. And that's really where the change has to start coming. I think it's a long road before you see a 50% as a common thing of women in the executive suite, but it can be done. You know, again, through self empowerment, through education, and you know, the women like Sherry or myself that sort of have made that leap and been able to get there, sort of creating that opportunity for others.
Well, if I had a clap track on here, I would play it right now for on behalf of Beeline for working its way up from the percentage it was to 50%. That's fantastic. It's really getting to the point where it's a non-issue or non-discussion, and that's where you are right now as a company looking at it from a diversity perspective. That succession seat is huge. I haven't heard someone say that before. I think that's brilliant. So I'm going to start using that in my talks. And I would argue it starts in the classroom. It also starts at home, and treating siblings the same way and treating parents the same way as spouses, with equality at young ages from the time they're born till the time they get to school and so on. I really think I agree. We've seen a lot of change, and there's still a place within the home that we can make change that'll then impact the workforce as well. So thank you for sharing that. And your last piece, the lead with professional grace and conviction, I've heard it throughout all of the other values that you mentioned. And my guess is that it stems a little bit on being confident, but maybe quickly you can share what that means for you.
Sure. This one is interesting, and it's actually a more recent learning. I've been told on occasion that I can be abrasive. And I think that word is reserved exclusively, for the most part, for women. So I'll own it. I can be sometimes. But I've also learned that I can soften that abrasiveness a little bit with empathy. And that's probably been one of the key learnings for me later in my career. So being direct, you know, that's not going to change. That's my personality. That's also how I move quickly and how I feel like things get done, and you spend less time in it, sort of more meandering, you know, place when you can be direct. But that also has to be direct with compassion and grace. So I did learn through that I could be more effective in the compassion and grace side of things, which I feel like I tend to be in my home life, but not so much, you know, at work. I tend to be a little faster moving and more direct. Confidence is absolutely part of it. And I would say it's confidence in your knowledge and expertise, also in your authenticity. You know, you need to be careful not to make it about ego. Confidence and ego are very different. And the way you make it not about ego is acknowledging that everyone you're interacting with, regardless of their perspective and where they are, they have something to offer in that knowledge and experience capacity, and they're coming from a different perspective, and to respect that perspective. So that's, for me, that's what professional grace is, and sort of is my way of softening that abrasiveness, is pausing, listening, trying to be empathetic to kind of where they are and what their perspective is, and then I can be direct in a way that isn't deemed abrasive.
Right. It's coming from the heart. I mean, you can tell that just in hearing your voice and your tone now. It's we have been, as a company, following a lot about radical candor and looking at, you know, they have the four quadrants, and I struggle with the opposite issue. I'm more on the ruinous empathy side, and I'm trying to work more on that being direct. But everyone knows it's coming from my heart. That's just how I operate as a leader, is everything is from my heart. I treat everyone like family, but you also need to be direct. So being candid, but having it show with the heart. So I love that we're coming at it from two different places, but yeah, Going to the same place on opposite ends. If we lived in the same town, I'd say we need to go grab coffee often and learn from each other on that. But yeah, that's something that we're constantly working on and talking about here as a company as well. So just transitioning over to Credible, we talked a little bit about it at the beginning. I have to ask you just a really direct question. I sat through a demo of it to try and learn a little bit more about the product. I even had a recruitment company, so on the supplier side, sit in on it with me so I could get their perspective of it. And it's fascinating to me. I think it's a brilliant and phenomenal idea. So it's a portal, again, just to put it super in very simple terms, it connects suppliers to buyers and buyers to suppliers. It makes me wonder, however, has this been done before? If not, why? And if so, how are you different, or how do you feel like both sides are embracing the concept? I know it's fairly new yet, but just curious as to the background on that, and if it's being done, and if not, how are you making this happen, and how is it being embraced?
Yeah, I think the key is it is new. We're in the very early stages, and we're still in the learning stages. We're right now, it's, you know, a completely free pilot, because we're really trying to understand both perspectives from the buyer and the supplier now that we have it in production and people are using it. We're getting a lot of interaction and learning about the relationships, you know, that are built through the business of talent acquisition and management. So it's been really exciting. The best thing to consider is really like why did we start it? And that sort of answers, you know, is anyone doing it already? And if not, why? I don't particularly know why. As we started to investigate, how do we add more value to this part of our user population that we've somewhat neglected in the past? We looked at what is it that they need. And so we got on the phone. We went through this process that we go through for research, where we just interview dozens and dozens of people that do and work in the area that we're trying to solve problems for, and just really tried to get an understanding of what it is they needed. And what we came across was the problem related to how staffing companies spend thousands of dollars a month, hundreds of calls per week, dozens of emails, drop-by visits, social media connections, just to try to break through to compete to get on a client's preferred supplier list or be a named supplier in their program. And it's often a no-win situation for both the buyer, the company, and the supplier who's trying to connect with them. Suppliers don't win because they're so frequent in their reach out and their timing is not great. So the solicitations kind of leave the client on the other end, or the company on the other end, annoyed at a minimum, and often results in the supplier sort of falling into a black hole database or trash bin of business cards that the buyer doesn't really tap into until there's some urgent, you know, need for them. But that could be a year down the road. Some suppliers are even penalized for being overly persistent. So, you know, they get to that point where they're reaching the annoying factor, and the client's like, I just don't want to talk to them anymore. While others are overlooked when they aren't persistent enough. So it's this crazy imbalance in suppliers kind of trying to get on these supplier lists at these big companies. Buyers, on the other hand, aren't winning either, because they go long stretches of time, probably 2 or 3 years or maybe even more, without scanning the market. They don't know about, you know, the growth of suppliers that maybe they looked at before, or the new suppliers that may have entered the market that can do something that they've been needing and didn't even know was out there, because the process to engage is scary. They don't want to get hounded once they open that, you know, I might be looking announcement. You know, they get inundated, and then they aren't reaching out to the broader community for needs they might need on a one-off basis either. So they're missing out on innovation, they're missing out on growth, and they're missing out on great new sources of talent. So that's why we started Credible, was to be able to create those connections to sort of temper that timing piece of it, allow a supplier to connect with a buyer, you know, allow a buyer to protect themselves from being inundated but not lose sight, and always be able to kind of tap into that population. So that's why we started it. We've gotten a lot of feedback that there are some things we need to add and more we need to do. One of the big requests is, can you just make jobs available through the platform that suppliers can fill? And we're looking into that. We're responding to that. And our buyers are giving us the same feedback. How can I know that what a supplier says they can do is really what they can do, and they're not just selling me on something that they'll figure out later? So we're working on features that will help answer some of those questions. But that's what we're doing.
Well, I look forward to watching it evolve and continuing to stay in touch to see where it goes. I definitely agree with you. It's a phenomenal idea, and I love that you're embracing the supplier side where you felt like perhaps you were neglecting, but addressing a very specific market need. So I think it'll be interesting as you continue to grow it to watch the market evolve and see what shakes out. So that's exciting, and I give you a lot of credit for launching that. So with that, unfortunately, we've come to an end of our podcast. I know I had a couple of other questions for you, but there were just so many great things to share. So before we officially end, I just want to put you on the spot real quickly. I'd love to end just learning something about someone where, you know, maybe people didn't know about you. So perhaps I've learned a lot about you on this call, but perhaps tell us one thing this could be even the closest people to you on your team at work, don't already know about you that others may find surprising or interesting.
Well, I think I already gave away that I didn't complete my undergrad until I was, you know, well into my career. So another, maybe one of the reasons for that, I started a family very young at 21. I have 4 children. My oldest daughter is 26 and now married, so that gives away my age a little bit. But I have 2 sons, 23 and 20, and a young daughter who is only 9 years old. So she was sort of my young surprise that keeps me on my toes. So that's usually an interesting thing that people are surprised when they hear about the age ranges of my children.
You no doubt lead an exciting life with the role you have, plus the family and everything. I will tell you again, I am on the opposite spectrum of you. I'm 45. I'll give out my age and have a 2-year-old. So I did the opposite of what a lot of people do. There's some interesting statistics, Colleen, out there, and I'll forward you an article on this that talks about women who start families at either a very young age or an older point in their career, and how they tend to be even more successful than women who start in their late to early 30s and mid 30s. So I'll share that with you, but it's an interesting statistic. So thank you for telling us your story, and I'm thrilled to spotlight senior women in our industry as often as we can. It's important to get your stories out there. And with that, people may want to get in touch with you. So how would they go about doing so? What's the best way to reach you?
So probably 2 ways, LinkedIn or Twitter. On LinkedIn, it's just go to the linkedin.com/NURL, and it's Colleen Tyner, all one word. And then on Twitter, I'm CM like Marie, CM Tyner, T-I-N-E-R.
Got it. Fantastic. Well, Colleen, thank you so much again for joining us, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much, Leslie. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.